relationship, Shandakra, and also talk about the other intertwined topic. So, as we started to see, the nature of this whole obligation of Shnei Mikra V'Echad Targum, which has been tested by some of the questions of what to do if you have a pasuk that doesn't have an obvious targum or doesn't have a need for a targum or the like, and various related questions, was now being explored through the additional question of how to look at the nature of the enactment. So is this an enactment of Talmud Torah in the straightforward sense, or is this something which takes on kind of a tefillah component, kind of a recitation aspect to it? So the whole question of the timing is itself interesting. The idea that the Gemara ties it in specifically to the Tzibor's Kriyas HaTorah, which, as we noted from the outset, is interesting. If the purpose is that it is a Talmud Torah program, kind of a early version of Daf Yomi for Torah Shebichsav, so then why should it be tied into the Tzibor's Kriyas HaTorah? Is it something that is a preparation for the Kriyas HaTorah? Is it meant to synergize with Kriyas HaTorah? Should Kriyas HaTorah enhance the personal learning? Should the personal learning enhance the Kriyas HaTorah? Is that why it should be synchronized? Should it be Davka before the Kriyas HaTorah? Is that an idea? And the Shulchan Aruch seems to take a stand on that. And when we say that it has to be in sync with the timing, so what exactly do we mean by that? So the Gemara weighs in on this a little bit by making the point that it shouldn't be done too much in advance, and that the idea of packing it all in on Erev Yom Kippur was doubly a bad idea. First of all, Erev Yom Kippur is a busy day, as we'll discuss a little bit more, and that in general it should be coordinated, it should be in sync, it shouldn't be done in advance. So how crucial is that? The idea that it should stay stuck to that time frame and not earlier and not later. So the tour says once the week is over, that's it. Over is mano. But there is the view of Rabbeinu Simcha that the Beis Yosef brings. And in the Shulchan Aruch, it's a Yesh Omrim, that you can do it until Shmini Atzeres, which we understand to mean in Chutz Laretz Simchas Torah, and therefore associated with the end of the cycle. And that's why it's called Simchas Torah, presumably because in honor of Rabbeinu Simcha, who allows you to finish reading the Parsha until then. So there is a sort of a mysterious comment, which some later Sfarim say they don't even understand why it's there, that if you're going to avail yourself of the Shita, so it means specifically Shnei Mikra V'Echad Targum and not just one Mikra, in the Beis Yosef he explains that is because there were those who had a minig to read the whole Torah on Shmini Atzeres. So it's just to explain that's not what we're talking about, not going through the whole Chumash once, but that if you're making up Shnei Mikra by that day, we mean actually doing Shnei Mikra V'Echad Targum and not just going through the Chumash once. So how to understand what that represents, that whole idea of making it up later, and what that says about the Chiyuv to begin with, is an interesting question. So we started to note yesterday that Rav Kook took the view against Rav Avadja and against some of the Rishonim, the Rush and the Tur, that you shouldn't do Shnei Mikra during Avelus. The view of the Rush and the Tur was that it could be done during Avelus because it could be seen more of a Chovas Sayom rather than Stam Talmud Torah, while this other view maintains that since you could make it up later, so then better to do that and not allow this Torah study to take place during Avelis, when we don't allow Talmud Torah that's not Chovas Hayom. So the idea of Tashlumin for this obligation, how exactly would you look at that? Would you look at that as seeing it more of a tefillah-oriented kind of thing, or more of a Talmud Torah kind of thing, and therefore it's about the material, and material is not so time-dependent? Because it could have implications either way.
Yeah, sounds more like a Torah thing.
So I would think that's certainly what Rav Kook sounds like, right? You know, for that implication that, okay, so this is about the material, so you don't really have to do it now. So better not to do it during Avelis.
So what would be the value of reciting it all by Shmini Atzeres? If you're reciting it every week, because you're doing it with the Tzibur every week, by Shmini Atzeres, you're catching up on Parshas that we already did, you're just behind.
So that's an interesting question, you're saying. So then why ever have a cap, you're saying? Is that the point?
Meaning, if that's why I think it has more to do with normative Torah learning as opposed to like a recital of Chovas Hayom. Because if it's Chovas Hayom, then why would it be all the way till Shmini Atzeres?
But I thought you were asking the question of saying then why stop it then even.
Because
that's an interesting question also. Maybe you should say don't even have it stop then. Just say, okay, you have a debt that you carry around forever until you pay it off. It's depressing, right? So as I mentioned yesterday, the whole question of what's considered a kuli here and what's considered a chumra is a little bit subjective. Some people would probably rather the amnesty that would come from, you know, say, okay, just give me a clean break here. So I don't know if it's good news or bad news hearing that you have the ability to make it up. So however you want to view this. But it's interesting. So the Marsham has a tshuva, is Reshit Gimel, Chelek Aleph, where he quotes two views, and there were many after him who got involved in this whole debate, both sides. So, Lamaisa, if somebody is making up a previous parsha, and it's now a later parsha, so what should he do first? Yeah.
Well, it seems you should do the parsha of that week because that would satisfy the most machmir opinion.
Meaning what?
Meaning that we have obviously you could say you could be mekel and maybe you could do it later, but by doing the parsha that week, I'm satisfying all opinions. But if I do the earlier parsha, then I'm only satisfying the opinion that I could do it the Shmini Atzeres. There seems to be maybe a higher value in doing the.
You're saying also, let's say that the one that you're doing now is for sure din.
It's for sure din, and you're
so it's
doing
more
Sibur.
It's more makudish.
Yeah.
So it should get priorities. So he says, Marsha mentions that svara of tadir, you know, that if it's which really is a way of saying makudish, you know, that it's or bismano, you know, that it's tadir probably isn't really the right word for it, but it's one of those things that are mentioned in the category together with tadir that it's a mitzvah bismano. So there are a number of reasons why, but especially if you join the shiurim in the fourth parak after Pesach, so you'll see that when it comes to tashlumin for tefillah, there is a strong hakpada in that context that the tefillah tashlumin, the tashlumin tefillah comes after the tefillah of that zman. So if you miss shachris, for example, and you're davening two shmon esrei as a mincha, the mincha shmon esrei has to come first. Now, why that is itself a whole discussion. So should this be compared to that? That seems to be the inclination of the Marsham, that you should see a parallel there, and there were others who disagreed, but it's also hard to know what to glean from that. So if you want to draw the comparison, you're saying that basically this is really kind of taking on kind of a tefillah format, and it's more about that. And the same way when it comes to tefillah, so the Chovas Hayom comes first and the makeup comes later. So too, that's the way it should be. Or maybe it's not really that you'd be comparing it to tefillah, but it's that whatever reason it is that tefillah follows that format, this should also follow that format. So tefillah maybe also has an argument of Mekudosh and Tadir and the like. Although in that context, when the Aruch HaShulchan and others talk about that argument, it's pointed out that that's probably not the reason, because when it comes to tefillah, it seems to be likuva, that you absolutely have to do the mincha before, and therefore it seems to be something more fundamental and not just about tadir or about preferences. So it's hard to know exactly what to glean from this comparison. And there are some who also are machalik, that say it depends how much you missed. That if you're just behind one parsha, then maybe it makes sense to start from last week's parsha and then maintain the order and go straight. But if you missed a lot of parshios, then probably you should start from this week's parsha and then go back and make up the missing parshios. There is a perspective on this in the Sefer Yom Shabbosom. It's a contemporary Sefer by Rabbi Yoel Schlesinger, who's a mechaber of many, many svarim, the Rav of Gilo and Yerushalayim. He works off a premise that I'm not sure is such a given, and I'm not sure if I would necessarily agree, but just to share his assumption. So he comes off the premise that based apparently on the fact that you can make up these missed parshios, which really is a machlokas. As I mentioned, the Torah doesn't quote it at all. The Torah says the opposite. So it's hard to take this as a definitional aspect of Shnei Mikra. It's a disputed point. But he takes that to mean that all the parshios are ma'akev each other. That the chiyuv of Shnei Mikra means that you have to do all the parshios in order to be yotzei. And that's why you're able to make it up. And then the question is, so why is that true? So he posits that clearly the takana of Shnei Mikra is not just a chiyuv Talmud Torah, because that we already have, v'gisa yom v'layla. So rather, it is a specific takana of Imhat Tzibur. And therefore, Imhat Tzibur means the entire cycle of Imhat Tzibur. And that's what emerges from our Gemara, that we find that the whole cycle has to be done together. And that's where the effort was done to do the whole cycle in Erev Yom Kippur. And it was told, no, that it has to be spread out throughout the year. But that was the suggestion. So I don't know if that's so compelling, because again, to derive anything from the idea of the Tashlumen seems a little bit forced, because it sounds more, first of all, that that's a disputed point. So to say that that shows you something about how the whole Takana is set up seems to be a little difficult. And also it sounds more like that is a heter rather than a chiyuv, or it's more of a detail rather than a indication of the nature of the whole concept. So it's a little bit of a stretch. So there is some discussion as to what Imhat Tzibur means and whether it should extend to the following Tuesday or from the following Wednesday, as you find comes to Havdalah, or the Zugmar in Gittin that talks about the previous Wednesday. So here you have many tshuvas that are written about the language that you find in the poskim until Suda Shabbos. So the question of what that means, practically Suda Shabbos, because on the one hand, lunch on Suda Shabbos is after Kriyas HaTorah, and nighttime is before Kriyas HaTorah, but does that mean it has to be before dinner? That's going to end up to be probably a significant chumrah, because it cuts out one of the major zones that one could use So here, the Orchas Chaim, the Spinker Rav, talks about this, and he understands that the Suda Shabbos really is a way of saying Kriyas HaTorah for Shabbos morning. It doesn't mean specifically exactly before the Sudas in either case. And again, here I think we're talking about preferences, and I would not necessarily get more hung up than necessary on some of these pshitas when the question is trying to find a way to make sure to find a plan that works. And then the question becomes also what counts. So we alluded to this issue yesterday. So here there is a fundamental question as to what the purpose of the takana is, and that ties into that whole Ataras V'Divon question also. And the Shulchan Aruch seems to be unsure about this. So if you saw the way it's brought over there in Resh Peh, so it sounds like Rashi probably does the trick. Now, when you say Rashi, it clearly doesn't mean only Rashi, because Rashi, we're talking about a din in the Gemara, and the Gemara can't be talking specifically about Rashi, and Rashi here doesn't comment kigon me when interpreting the Gemara says Targum. So what we mean is something that explains the text, and presumably the idea is that a commentary of the style of Rashi is going to satisfy that. So we have a Masorah that Rashi has a good reputation for giving us the interpretation based on the understanding of Chazal and the traditional interpretations. So therefore, Rashi is going to certainly accomplish that. There'll be other Shonen that would also accomplish that. And as Rav Schechter has pointed out, it wouldn't necessarily extend to the longer comments in Rashi that go beyond explaining the Pshat and the Psukim. Although, from an educational perspective, it's certainly a value, a tremendous value in learning those also, because that's a part of our basic knowledge base. But as far as the Chiyuv Shnei Mikra, it's not so obvious that's necessarily included. So that premise is the assumption that we're trying to just understand what the words mean, and that presumably Rashi would accomplish that. But the Shulchan Aruch goes on to say that Yerei Shamayim should read the Targum also. So there the premise seems to be, as we've noted, that when it comes to Unklus, there is this idea that the Gemara in the beginning of Megillah indicates, that Unklus is Misinai on some level, and therefore there is some special significance that is not shared by other Targumim or other attempts at translation, and therefore it could be that that's providing something that we're not going to get otherwise. So the idea that the Shulchan Aruch has, that ideally you would do both, it seems to cover all our bases, that we would try to understand what the psukim are talking about through some kind of explanation, and also get this Sinaitic element of the Targum that is conveyed through Unklus. In the Tshuvas of Salmas Chaim, those are the Tshuvas of Rav Yosef Chaim Sonnenfeld, of the old Yishuv of Yerushalayim, so the Shoel asks him that maybe this position of the Shulchan Aruch is reflective of the view of the Ran here, so we'll make this a little seasonal. Throw in a little Pesach idea here. So you were around for Pesachim, if I recall correctly. Right? So we remember, so we learned the Pesachim. So the Ran in Arve Pesachim has the Yesod that's applied to other things, that the Gemara in Pesachim has a discussion about Haseba for Dalet Kosos, and the Gemara has two possibilities, not sure which, about what you have to have Haseba for. So one possibility is you need to have Haseba for the first two Kosos, and the other possibility is you need to have Haseba for the last two Kosos, and doesn't conclude which one it is. So what do you do, Lamaisa? So the round there says that you have to have a seva for all four kosos, even though you could have thought safik drabanan lakula, it's a din drabanan, dalek kosos and haseva are both dinim drabanan. So you could have thought that if we're not sure, so we should be makel. But he says, what would that mean? So with makel being just pick one set randomly, so that's not a kula. There's no svar to say one over the other. And if that would mean don't do it by either set, so then that's not an acceptable application of safik drabanan lakula to just eradicate it in. So therefore, the only alternative is to be machmir for both, and that's what you have to do. So the Shoel and the Tshuva Salmas Chaim says maybe that's what's going on here also, that we have a suffix as to what the purpose of Targum is. Is Targum so that we'll understand what's going on better, or is Targum so that we'll have this Sinaitic tradition from Unklus, and we're not really sure, so we can't really apply Safek Drabbanan Lakula because of this principle of Iran. So that's why the Shulchan Aruch is saying that ideally we'll try to accomplish both. So we'll try to get an Unklus and try to also understand it. But the idea that Rashi is specifically the Targum, again, clearly that's not the intent of Chazal. That's just what's developed as the one of the best ways to accomplish this. And theoretically, there could be other ways, but that's a time-tested path to accomplish this goal. And that's a good way of doing it. The Shulchan Aruch says also that Melamde Tinokos, who are teaching the Parsha throughout the week, are also Yotze. And that also shows you that some of the details that the post can talk about in terms of whether it should be Pasuk Pasuk or Parsha Parsha or all on Erev Shabbos, etc., clearly, again, are not Ma'akev, and that the ways of fitting into your schedule are probably more important than figuring out all of those preferences. And Shulchan Aruch does quote straight out, if you saw, that one of the readings can be during Kriyas HaTorah. Later Sfarim, they talk about how ideal that is or isn't, whether that's a perfect idea or not, and what exactly that would entail in terms of the Seder. Here again, the whole question of making it work for your schedule is a big part of the consideration. There is a discussion in some Sfarim about how does that sync up with advice when it comes to Megillah. So when it comes to Megillah Esther, so if we're sitting there with a printed Megillah, we don't have a kosher Megillah, so there are those who recommend that you don't necessarily read out loud because you're not going to be able to hear the Megillah read from a kosher Megillah if you're reading at the same time. And you're not hearing directly from the Baal Kori who's reading from a Kasher Megillah. So then the question comes up, if that's the position that one takes regarding Megillah, so is that going to contradict this advice regarding Shnei Mikra and Kriyas HaTorah? So they point out that it's not necessarily the same, because when it comes to Megillah, Megillah is a Chovas HaYachid, that we all have an obligation to hear the Megillah. And we do so through Shomea Kaona, that the person who's reading the Megillah is fulfilling our obligation on our behalf. So we need to hear him in order to do that, and we need to hear it from a Kasher Megillah. So we need to listen to his Kriyas HaMegillah in order to fulfill that. When it comes to Kriyas HaTorah, it's not the same thing. When it comes to Kriyas HaTorah, we don't have an obligation to be Yotze as if we are ourselves laning. It is a Chovas HaTzibur that we need to be present while the laning is taking place. So the fact that we may be reading along from our Chumashim doesn't necessarily contradict our ability to fulfill the obligation of participating in the Kriyas HaTorah. That is the Chovas HaTzibur, so it's not the same kind of issue that comes up with Kriyas Megillah. Is it a good idea or not? Does it interfere with your concentration? How exactly does it work out with the plan of doing Pasuk with Targum, etc., etc.? So then later Svarim talk about whether this is an ideal plan or not. Again, the Shulchan Aruch does clearly allow it, whether that's more of a concession or a lachachila. That's a question, but that's its own discussion. And we noted that according to those who felt that it's specifically supposed to be a preparation for Kriyas HaTorah, either so that you'll understand Kriyas HaTorah better or that you'll be prepared for laning, so then it certainly seems that doing it during Kriyas HaTorah is not going to be consistent with that, and that's also part of the whole discussion. Hi.
Well, on the contrary, it could be, according to the, maybe this was a model, I think this was a model we proposed either yesterday or Monday of Pasuk, Targum, Pasuk, that third, or even just doing the Ivrit and then Targum and then Ivrit again, even if not a Pasuk by Pasuk, that the second time that we do it in Hebrew would still, without Targum, could still happen during the Torah reading, because the idea of that was proposed in Shir was that we would first go over it once in the Hebrew, and then we'd understand what it meant, and then when we came back to it in Hebrew, we'd have that new understanding. That could still happen if your second reading in Hebrew is during Kriyat HaTorah.
If that's the purpose of the Targum.
Right.
But if the purpose of the whole Takana is that should all happen in order to prepare you, let's say, for laning yourself or for understanding laning better, so then that's going to be compromised by doing part of it during Kriyas HaTorah. So it depends on how you understand the whole thrust of everything. If the Targum is so that you should understand the second Mikra better, then yes, that would be true. So these are some of the principles that have been brought into this discussion. There is still a lot more to say, and that's, again, probably the common refrain when it comes to Shnayim Mikra, feeling that there's always more to do, and it's always overwhelming. But those are some of the major thoughts. Those are some of the major themes that emerge. And I would emphasize, again, that it's a challenging concept, time-wise, but we do our best, and I think there's a little bit of a tension that emerges because there is a desire to fulfill the Takanas Chazal in a minimal way, in at least a minimal way, and there's also the reality that this hopefully dovetails with our basic educational goals also, and trying to maximize the synergy of that experience and the efficiency of that experience sometimes is more time-consuming, or by definition is more time-consuming, but then we get into a little bit of a tafasta meruba, lo tafasta situation. So everyone's got to calibrate for themselves what is the best mahalach in terms of making sure that you get the most out of it and are also able to fulfill it in at least a basic way. So here we see that the Shulchan Aruch is telling you certain things that are somewhat of a concession. Again, doing it during Kriyas HaTorah, debate whether that's l'chadchila or a concession. Doing both Rashi and Nicholas, the Shulchan Aruch says that that's really more of a chumrah, that the Yerei Shamayim should do both. So it sounds like theoretically you could be yotze with just one of those. But at least figuring out how to work it in within your schedule and also maximize the educational value, and you know, recognize that the basics of Torah Shebichsav Chumash with the tradition of Torah Shebaal Peh that Rashi conveys and that the Targum gives you as the Sinaitic interpretation is part of the fundamental building blocks of our religion. So to the extent that you can reinforce that every year as a basic educational goal, together with the fact that it's at the Kanav Chazal, is something that we very much want to get into our framework. And that's a part of the whole theme of this first parak of Brachos, part of the whole theme of the Masechta, but this is of a piece with the daily mitzvah of Kriyashma and Kriyashma al Hamita and Zechiras Yetzias Mitzrayim, which are all together in this first parak, and they all have this in common, that that's pretty much what they're all geared towards. Your own?
Yeah, I guess two questions, but one's based off the other.
Mm-hmm.
So if, let's say, one doesn't understand Targum, let's say, because it's in Aramaic, so it's a harder, I guess, translation to be reading and understanding either way. So question one would be, is there value in still just reading it without fully understanding it? And to that extent, then, let's say one doesn't, you know, I guess if it's not enhancing one's learning or understanding of the Psukim, if one, let's say, doesn't read Rashi or Targum, is there, you know, value or room to say that one can do a different Rishon or Achron that one appreciates or would enhance his learning more, such as the Ramban or more Achronish form that may also not comment on every pasuk, but that would enhance one's, I guess, appreciation for what they're learning more than just doing Rashi or Targum?
So there's definitely value to reading, let's say, Uncle Asut if you don't understand it, because first of all, you will ultimately come to understand it more by reading it. So it doesn't come right away, but it's going to come through doing it. So certainly there's value in doing it in the meantime. But the question is, what should you supplement it with? And also, in light of the fact that...
Well, yeah, I guess the other thing is that there are a lot of, I guess, competing interests that it's very time-consuming.
Right.
And, you know...
So that's the question. So, but there's certainly value in doing it, because it's going to ultimately come, and especially because you're also learning Gemara in Aramaic, so the more you practice your Aramaic, the better overall. But, so certainly... Certainly, highly recommended on every level, but then, to supplement, it's hard to imagine in terms of, let's say, the Hebrew part that the Ramban is going to be easier than Rashi. But so to use,
I guess, more from an appreciation standpoint. Meaning, so even if, I guess, let's just say Targum is more of just a direct translation in, I guess, Aramaic, or if that's not as, I guess, you know, scintillating for someone, if they don't appreciate it as much as reading a good Ramban or even let's say
so you should do that also, but you want to get something that covers all the Psukim, and you want to get something that gives you a basic interpretation. So I think that's what we meant when he said that Rashi is clearly not the intention of Chazal, because, you know, that's clearly anachronistic, but it's a time-tested tradition. So to know that you're necessarily going to accomplish that with another parish, you could accomplish a lot of that, but you have you want something that's going to give you a basic shot kind of interpretation on most of the text. So Rashi is a pretty good plan for that. The other Mefarshim that could also be pretty solid on that, but the further away you get from getting shot interpretations, it has value, but in terms of the specific Tarkana, you may not necessarily be fulfilling that goal as much. Especially focused on scintillation. Scintillation is good, but it's not necessarily what the Takana is about. But that's part of what I'm getting at, that there is a little bit of a balance here between the Takana and maximizing the educational experience, which is also important. So to try to calibrate in terms of what time constraints you have and what will be the most effective for you. So that's a little bit of a personal endeavor. And that's one of the advantages of the smartphone, that you can now accomplish a lot while waiting in line and while on a bus, and the excuses have been reduced. There's a lot that the apps can provide. But it's a ongoing experience. It takes a lot of trial and error to find out what works best. And then there's always next year to tweak and to try it again. So just to say a few words about the other chiyuv that the Gemara talks about that is intertwined here, so it doesn't feel so timely, but just to talk a little bit about this idea of eating an Erev Yom Kippur. So it sounds like from our Gemara here that the idea of eating an Erev Yom Kippur is a chiyuv daraisa, and that is how it's related to, that it's a drasha from this pasuk, the fact that the Gemara talks about inui, the Torah talks about inui on Tisha l'Chodesh, on the 9th of Tishrei. And as far as we know, and it's the kind of thing you don't want to get wrong, so Yom Kippur is the 10th of Tishrei. So what's pshat on saying the 9th of Tishrei? So the Gemara says here that apparently kalam hisane v'tishrei v'asiri ki ilu hisane If you eat and drink on the ninth, it's credited as if you have fasted both days. Now, it's an interesting question. Why would you want to fast both days? Is there some mila as fasting both days? That's not explained by the Gemara, and that's something that needs to be explored. What's the goal there? And that's a multi-level question. So how is it credited for that? And why are we even looking for that? So that's something that needs to be answered on some level. And before exploring that, so just what is the Gemara saying here as far as the Chiyuv? So it sounds like that's a drasha on a level in the HaTorah. That's how it is basically taken, even though it a little bit contradicts the fact that the Gemara elsewhere, in Rosh Hashanah and Daf Tes, uses this pasuk for a different din, which we also assume to be a din min HaTorah. And that is that there is the obligation of Tosefes min HaTorah. A Tosefes Shabbos and Yom Tov overall, at a minimum Yom Kippur, because that's the context of the Gemara. The Gemara says that what could we understand from talking about fasting on the 9th when Yom Kippur is the 10th. So there the Gemara says, Mikan Shemosifin Michal LaKodesh, that you have to borrow a little bit from the 9th to add to the 10th, so you start the fast on the 9th. And almost all the Rishonim understand that that means not just Yom Kippur, but every Shabbos and Yom Tov, all Kedusha starts earlier. The Rambam is the outlier, that he has the minimalist reading, that it means just what it's talking about, just Yom Kippur, and just the fast of Yom Kippur, just the Inui, is an obligation in HaTorah to start early. But the other Rishonim apply it to all Kedusha, Shabbos, and Yom Tov, and everything. Happens to be a major Pesach sugya, but that's its own discussion. So, in that context, it's a question then, why do we have two different limudim from the same pasuk, and we assume they're both min HaTorah, so the Rush discusses this in Yuma and here. So that's its own story. We won't get into it too much. It's also an interesting discussion in the poskim that these dinim could theoretically come into contradiction to each other, because let's say you don't have time to eat until right before Yom Kippur. So then you have to decide what's more important, to start the fast early or to have a meal. And that's the machlokas poskim. The Ksav Sofer is the truth about this, and the Machzav Ram and others. Which of the dinim that's learned from this pasuk is more important, to start the fast early or to eat on Erev Yom Kippur, when they come into direct conflict with each other? So that's itself an interesting discussion. But Lamaisa, what is the purpose of this idea of eating on Erev Yom Kippur? So Rishonim seem to have pretty different understandings, and in the later Sfarim, they have additional understandings, which get farther and farther afield. But there really are, among the many understandings, there are two major ones that stand out. Anyone want to guess what those are? Yeah, Eric?
That it's the Yom Tov meal.
So one possibility is that it's a Yom Tov meal. Yeah. That might be the less obvious one, but that is one of the possibilities. The Ritva sounds like that. Rabbeinu Yonah in Shari Tshuva goes through all those possibilities, yeah?
That it's designed to help you fast on Yom Kippur proper.
Okay, so that's the other one. But I'll first say a little bit more generally, just to accommodate more possibilities, well, you're correct, is that it is to prepare for the fast. So those are the two basic, most likely possibilities. Again, there are more, especially in later sources. But the two most likely possibilities are, like Natanel says, to prepare for the tainus, or like Eric said, like the Ritva and others have, that it's the Suda for Yom Kippur, because the assumption being that Yom Kippur really is a Yontif and should have a Suda. There's just one major technical impediment, this Isser Karis that's involved with eating, so it kind of gets in the way. So maybe we push it up, but maybe it is the Chiyuv Suda. Hi.
Is the idea that we can have a Yom Tov Meal for Yom Kippur on the 9th at all tied in with Tosefes Yom Tov?
It does in an interesting way. So, yeah, in a kind of a backwards way, because the question of, it's a little complicated how it ties in, so let's come back to it later. You can bring a raya from here to something. Let's come back to it later. But because it gets complicated, it does connect in kind of a roundabout way. So the Shari Tshuva, as noted, he goes through a couple of different angles as to which it is. He mentions all of these. But first, to note what Netanel said, and I said he could phrase it a little bit more broadly. So it could be a preparation for the fast. So the preparation for the fast most likely is, like Netanel said, to make the fast easier. Because you don't want to go into a fast day with a big appetite because you haven't eaten. Now, there are different ways to look at what that means. And the one minority way is the Torah Tamima has a quote from the Gemara in Tainus that sees it kind of the opposite way, that it actually makes it harder to fast if you go from feast to famine. So that's more of a adjustment, and that's what the Gemara means when it says it's as if you fasted both days, because the fast will be more intense if you go from a lot of eating to abrupt fasting. Yes, sir.
So one would think that in a year like this past year, that one should eat a massive meal on Erev Tisha B'Av, even though, like, unless Erev Tisha B'Av is Shabbat, one doesn't typically eat a massive meal right before Tisha B'Av to make the affliction of the fast even stronger on Tisha B'Av. But we don't find that by Tisha B'Av. I mean, yes, Yom Kippur is D'oraita, but...
So it's a discussion how this relates to Tisha B'Av. So let's push that off for a second, because it seems we don't find it by Tisha B'Av. It's an interesting discussion how it applies to Tisha B'Av. But most don't understand like this. But the Torah Tamima has this unusual way, that's the idea of making it harder. But the whole question, like we noted before, what exactly is the nature of this comparison of saying that it's as if you fast on the 9th and the 10th? So that has many questions that come out of it. So why do we want to do that? How is it like that? And where does that fit into the whole puzzle? So if you say that it makes the fast harder, so then, okay, so then on some level, it makes one day into twice as hard, so then maybe it's like that on some level. Again, why we want to make it twice as hard is not clear. There are some who suggest that the whole point is that actually, Yom Kippur, maybe in contrast to Tisha B'Av, and Rosh Sternbach has discussion about this, that maybe that's the point, that it's Davka not like Tisha B'Av, is that Yom Kippur is not about suffering, it's about being angelic, and that we highlight that by the fact that the day before there's a mitzvah Davka to eat, and that's so that we won't be suffering on Yom Kippur, and that if the idea was that we should eat, we should be fasting so that we'll be suffering, so then we wouldn't be encouraged to make sure that we've eaten heartily the day before. So we have this kind of Jewish mother mitzvah saying, you know, don't make sure not to be hungry, to show that it's not about suffering, and that the idea is that it's the Ratzon Hashem that we should be fasting on the 10th, just like it's the Ratzon Hashem that we should be eating on the 9th. And that's what the Gemara means. That's how some understand that the kiyum of eating on the 9th is just as much of a mitzvah as the kiyum of fasting on the 10th is. So that's what it means when it says that ki'ilu hisanet shivasiri. It's the same thing, not that it's just as hard, and it's certainly you're having a much better time on the 9th than on the 10th, but that as far as the spiritual accomplishment, it's going to be the same. We're going to run out of time. It's just to address one or two other points. So the question of whether it's meant to prepare for the fast or whether it's meant to be a Sudas Yontif has some interesting implications. Also, the nature of preparing for the fast is, even if you don't say like a Torah to me, but even if you assume that it's like most assume that it's to make the fast easier, but is that like a chesed of the Ribbono Shalom that, you know, it shouldn't be a miserable fast? Or maybe it's more about responsibility that you should not be in a position where you're going to have to break the fast because you weren't prepared. And that's an interesting halachic question. So how much does the obligation start earlier so that you're responsible for what you do before? So presumably if somebody were to decide to run a marathon that finishes the minute before Yom Kippur, and then say, okay, now I'm obligated to drink on Yom Kippur because otherwise I'll pass out and die. So, yeah, Lamaisa, if you're at that point, but then was that right to run the marathon right before Yom Kippur? So there is a whole interesting Dian and Poskim about what happens if somebody, his doctor tells him that he's healthy enough to fast on Yom Kippur, but he's not healthy enough to fast twice in a week. So what should he do about Tzom Gedalia? So on the one hand, you would say, well, Yom Kippur is clearly a bigger deal than Tzom Gedalia, so why should he sacrifice Yom Kippur for Tzom Gedalia? But on the other hand, Tzom Gedalia comes first, so do we say, okay, you do what your obligation is on that day, and then when Yom Kippur comes, so then you're an honest, because you might say you're not healthy enough at that point. So that was a major machlokas aposkim, but at least in that case, so you have a takanas chazal to be fasting on Tzom Gedalia. But if you don't have something like that, so presumably your responsibility is to do what you can to make sure that your health is at the right stage so that you are able to fast on Yom Kippur. And the Ritva has a language there, shul yavo lidei dechias inui, that you shouldn't come to the stage where you're not going to be able to fast because you're not adequately prepared. So that's an interesting question. Is this the kind of thing that's like a siag daraisa that we talked about a few times recently? The notion that there are dinim daraisa that are there to protect other dinim daraisa. Normally they're prohibitions, but is this the idea this is a positive mitzvah that's there to make sure you don't violate another din, or that you're not even going to violate it beheter, meaning violate it out of necessity? So that's an interesting question, and that could affect, as the Shultas and his commentary to the Shultas talks about, why is there no bracha on this mitzvah? It's a mitzvah daraisa to eat on Erev Kippur, so why is there no bracha on that? So some understand, because it's not a mitzvah of its own type, for its own purpose. It's there simply to prevent a sakana or to prevent a problem. So therefore, there's no bracha on that. So there are various nafkaminas in terms of what type of food. So is it a suda kind of food that you're supposed to have? Or is it any type of food? And is it one meal, or is it eating throughout the day? Somehow, the question of whether this applies to the previous night is supposed to be an afkamin, although that seems a little bit of a stretch to attach this to the issue too closely, because really it's not so machruch. But there is a tshuva of Rabbi Akiva Eger that's particularly interesting, and later poskim have a discussion along these lines as well, that, and we'll just mention this and then we'll dive in. Rabbi Akiva Eger was asked by a woman who was not well and was not planning on fasting on Yom Kippur because she wasn't well. So the question was she obligated to eat on Erev Yom Kippur? Don't totally understand the Metzius, where it's the kind of condition she had that she couldn't fast, and she also didn't want to eat, so I don't understand exactly the situation. But okay, so wasn't planning on fasting on Yom Kippur, so the question was, is she obligated to eat on Erev Yom Kippur? So it said, well, you have to think about it like this, that if it's a din in preparing for the fast, so then she's pater from that because she's not planning on fasting. But if it's a din in a sudas yontif, so then what?
She could have it on Yom Kippur.
No, she can't have it on Yom Kippur.
She's not fasting.
No,
so.
But you can't go any more than you need to. That's not where he's going. But
What if she needs to have a kazayit on
no,
Yom Kippur?
No, no, no.
It's a mitzvah
sei shazman grama. So the mitzvah sei shazman grama, so she should be pater for that reason. So he says, mimanov shach, she should be pater. Because either mitzvah sei shazman grama or it's tied into the fast, and she should be exempt either way. So that's an interesting taliya. Later, post can talk about this question also, and that's an interesting combination. Hi.
If a person's doctor tells them not to fast, and then they go on and do so, have they accomplished something?
Probably not. That's first of all, they're putting themselves in danger. There's a mice shahaya. They said that somebody did that, and then they passed away. And Rebecca of Kamenetsky said that you should treat that person as a ma'abed atzma l'das, whatever nafka means that has. But it's important to understand that this is not just as a matter of l'maisa. What would happen after the fact is a different question, but l'maisa, it's important to understand, is not a situation where a person is allowed to be machmel.
Does it make a difference if the person views the argument not as a halachic one, but as a medical one?
Well, you can go in the other direction. The Gemara says that if the doctor says that you are able to fast and the person knows that he's not, so the Gemara says, the Pasuk says, the Gemara interprets, Adam Yodei Amaras Nafsho, a person will know that he's sick and the doctor may not recognize it. But you're not allowed to be Machmir or B'makom Sakana. So that's very important to appreciate. But it's also a good question of this premise of Rebbe Akiva Eiger, though, to go the other way. To say, all right, to fast, but makom sakana you can't do. But what about this, to assume that you should be pater from the eating on Erev Yom Kippur because you're not going to be fasting? So it's based on Frank talks about that. And he says, who knows, there may be a miraculous Yeshua. There might be by the time Yom Kippur comes, then he might be better. So to assume a day in advance that he's not going to be fasting, that maybe you could say, maybe that won't necessarily follow through. Again, I don't know exactly the nature of the machla that requires you both to eat on Yom Kippur and not to eat the day before. If you're assuming that it's a din and a suda, it requires a more elaborate meal, so maybe that's okay, they're not up to having a whole suda with meat or bread or something like that. But if it's about not eating at all, a little harder to understand. But those were the basic taliyas that he had. It's an interesting iman of shach. Okay, more to say about this, but not more time, so we'll have to dive in. So tomorrow, Chamishi of Tazria, and time permitting, we'll also try to go a little further in Brachos, and again, our goal is to plow ahead and accomplish much as we can by next week. All right, do we have a volunteer?